From Washington, this is VOA News. I'm Victor Beatty reporting. President Donald Trump has rejected talks with the Taliban insurgency in the wake of a series of deadly attacks in Afghanistan that have killed and wounded hundreds. Mr. Trump spoke ahead of a meeting of the UN Security Council members Monday at the White House.
I don't see any talking taking place. I don't think we're prepared to talk right now. It's a whole different fight over there.
Mr. Trump deplored recent attacks, including Saturday's vehicle blast in the heart of Kabul that killed more than 100 and wounded at least twice that many.
They're killing people left and right. Innocent people are being killed left and right. Bombing in the middle of children, in the middle of families, bombing, killing all over Afghanistan. So we don't want to talk with the Taliban.
Mr. Trump, who outlined a new South Asia policy last August, including deployment of additional U.S. troops, pledged to finish what we have to finish. Michael Kugelman, South Asia expert at the Woodrow Wilson Center, said Mr. Trump's position is the right one.
I don't think that the U.S. government could conceivably agree to meet with an organization that has staged the level of savagery that we've seen with the Taliban over the last few days, where the Taliban has essentially gone after civilians and happily claimed credit for it.
Afghanistan's U.N. ambassador told Reuters that fighting needed to continue against certain elements of the Taliban, but he said there are reconcilable elements of the insurgency who are in touch with his government and are engaged in talks. Mali's president, Ibrahim Boubacar Keita, has declared 3 days of national mourning for dozens killed over the past week in several attacks in central Mali. Nearly 20 Malian soldiers were killed in two separate attacks over the weekend, while at least 26 civilians died Thursday when their vehicle detonated a landmine. This is VOA News. Russia Tuesday hosts what is billed as a Congress of National Dialogue on Syria in the Black Sea resort of Sochi. But the Syrian opposition, along with Britain and France, said they won't attend. The Kremlin hopes to launch negotiations leading to the drafting of a new constitution in a bid to end nearly 7 years of war. Who is attending? Andrew Tabler is with the Washington Institute for Near East Policy.
We have the Syrian regime. We have, of course, the Russians who are hosting. And we have a number of other parties in Syria who claim to be opposition but are not from the mainline opposition that has traditionally been fighting against President Assad.
Tabler said, whatever the outcome, it will face major hurdles in a post-war Syria.
The process was likely to be long, but of course, with the regime being there and with only token opposition forces, they can pretty much make whatever changes they want. Whether they can implement them or not is another matter.
Critics said the Sochi meeting is an effort to create a separate peace process that could undermine UN efforts to end the conflict. Meanwhile, rescuers frantically searched through debris in the town of Serakeb in rebel-held Idlib province following 2 days of Syrian airstrikes in the northwest province that left more than 30 dead. Intense fighting is also reported between Kurdish YPG militia and Turkish forces around Mount Bursa in Afrin province. In Yemen, the International Committee of the Red Cross said at least 36 have been killed, dozens wounded in 2 days of heavy fighting between rival factions for control of the port city Aden. Saudi-backed President Abdurrabbu Mansur Hadi called the latest violence a coup waged by separatists of the Southern Transitional Council. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres Monday met on the sidelines of the African Union summit in Ethiopia with Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir under an arrest warrant by the International Criminal Court for war crimes. A UN spokesman said the UN chief is obligated to meet with the Sudanese leader to discuss peacekeeping operations in Darfur and the disputed Abyei region. Colombian President Juan Manuel Santos suspended peace talks Monday with the ELN rebels after bomb attacks had killed seven policemen and wounded dozens.
Y la paciencia del pueblo colombiano.
Mr. Santos said his patience and that of the Colombian people has its limits. A ceasefire between the government and ELN expired early this month, but peace talks were supposed to continue. At least 10 inmates were killed Monday in what's described as gang violence in a jail in northeast Brazil. Dozens died in similar violence last year in what are described as often overcrowded and understaffed prisons. At least 36 were killed early Monday in India's West Bengal state when a bus plunged 12 meters into a river after the driver apparently lost control. Wall Street suffered its worst one-day decline in nearly 5 months Monday after tech giant Apple announced it will cut in half production for its iPhone X smartphone. The benchmark Dow Jones closing nearly 26,439, dropping 180. I'm Victor Beatty.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, January 30th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Liberian President George Weah announces a reduction in his salary and benefits and hopes the national legislature will do the same.
In view of the very rapidly deteriorating situation of the economy, I am informing you today with immediate effect that I will reduce my salary and benefit by 25%.
Gambia's President Adamman Barrow will discuss youth empowerment and employment. Togo's opposition parties will hold more anti-government protests tomorrow as they await ECOWAS-sponsored dialogue. And Kenyan opposition leader Raila Odinga will be sworn in today, Tuesday, despite government warning that such act will be treasonous.
NASA has no option but to keep on doing what they're doing because there is nobody extending an olive branch to calm down the situation. So as it were, NASA supporters will be in Nairobi and swearing in will go on.
Jakayo Midiwo is a prominent member of Kenya's main opposition coalition known as NASA. Many women in Burkina Faso still search out clandestine abortion procedures, and violence and insecurity are blocking polio eradication in three countries, including Nigeria. Those stories, plus our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Liberian President George Mani Weah has announced a reduction in his salary and benefits and hopes the national legislature will do the same. It is estimated a Liberian president makes nearly $4 million per year, including salary and benefits. Delivering his first annual State of the Nation address on Monday, President Weah said he inherited a broken economy characterized by a free-falling currency, rising inflation, high unemployment, and low foreign reserves.
The salaries of the president and the vice president are established by the legislature and cannot be increased or reduced during period for which they are elected. However, in view of the very rapidly deteriorating situation of the economy, I am informing you today with immediate effect that I will reduce my salary and benefit by 25% and give the proceeds back to the Consolidated Fund for allocation and appropriation as they see fit. In the meantime, I will ask you, honorable ladies and gentlemen, to follow my lead in the interest of our constituents. Our economy is broken. Our government is broke. Our currency is in free fall. Inflation is rising. Unemployment is at an unprecedented high, and our foreign reserves are at an all-time low. Honorable ladies and gentlemen, this is the challenge that we face. In order to overcome these constraints and reverse this trend, we, the executive, will have to work in close collaboration with you, the legislature, as separate branches of government to find solutions to these obstacles to our progress and development.
President Weah also called for a constitutional revision to remove a provision prohibiting foreigners from owning land in Liberia. He said to prevent foreigners from owning land is inconsistent with his declaration that Liberia is open for business.
No foreign investor will be willing to make significant direct investment in our country if they cannot own property in fee simple. It is inconsistent with my pronouncement that Liberia is open for business. Liberian citizens are free to purchase property in any other country, yet our constitution and laws will not allow similar privilege to be accorded to citizens of other nations. I therefore strongly recommend that this restriction be removed and that the appropriate rules and regulations of the Land Commission and other relevant agencies be amended and strengthened to accommodate this new development if approved by referendum.
For so long, diaspora Liberians have been calling for dual citizenship. Mr. Weah said diaspora Liberians should be welcomed back home, whether or not they renounce their adopted nationalities.
I believe that most Liberians who are also citizens of another country probably acquire the additional nationality as a means to escape from the terrible atrocity which characterized our civil conflict and for economic survival in their new countries of residence. If, as a condition precedent for another country to grant citizenship to these persons, they have to disavow their loyalty to Liberia and pledge allegiance to the laws of another country, then it could have been out of necessity rather than a matter of the heart. And if conditions now exist in Liberia that make them want to return home and contribute a quarter to the development of our common patrimony, then I do not think that it is fair to treat them as non-citizens in their own land of birth. Many Liberians in the diaspora have heard my clear call to return home and bring their energies, skills, talent, and expertise and join us in the building of a new Liberia. We need them. And so long as they were born in this country, they were Liberian first. And I believe that they should be welcomed back home with open arms.
President Weah said his administration will be based on what he called the four pillars of his platform: power to the people, economy and jobs, sustaining the peace and governance and transparency. Gambian President Adama Barrow says the focus of his government and the Gambian people should be on developing the country and not whether or not he serves 3 or 4 years in power. In part two of his exclusive interview with reporter Sini Marina, President Barrow says creating employment for the youth, who make up 65% of the country's population, is important to his administration. But first, he said, the economy must be stabilized.
It's about 60 to 65% of our population as youths. And I think that is very healthy for this country. They represent our manpower as far as work is concerned. But if I said we wanted to stabilize, you cannot create jobs if your economy is not stable. As of now, as the economy is stable, it has affected a lot of areas. But we are not relenting. We have opened up. This principle of democracy and so forth, we are progressing in those areas, and we are winning the confidence of investors. I believe that the private sector have a very, very big role to play, a very important role to play, as far as job creation is concerned, as far as economic growth is concerned. And a lot of people have interest. We have signed certain contracts, and we are in advanced stage in discussing with a lot of investors. The tourism sector, we are expecting over 200,000 tourists this year. And tourism is going to continue as a yearly thing. That is, we are creating jobs in them. I can't give you the percentage, but we have created jobs in those areas. We are engaging in the bilateral level with China and other countries so that we invest in the agriculture sector. Why in the agriculture sector? Agriculture is the backbone of this country. That is the reality. That's where our strength is. So we have to concentrate on that. We are engaging them because we have the land, we have the water, we have the manpower, and we have the market. We produce in 13% only. So that means we have a market of 87%. And our geographical location is so connected to other countries. So we have a wider market. If we are into farming, mechanized farming, and we add the value here, that will create a lot of jobs for us. In that area, we are very confident we can create jobs.
The coalition agreed to go in for 3 years. This is the controversy, talk of the town. What is the position of Mr. Barrow with regard to 3-5 years?
This debate will continue, for sure. But I don't think it is. We should be wasting our time on this debate. The most important thing is let's concentrate and develop this country. 3 years, 5 years, we leave it to the Gambian people. I think that's the decision of the Gambian people. Macky Sall, when he was coming, he said he'd be in office for 5 years instead of 7 years. There was a lot of debate. At the end, I think it's the Senegalese people who finally make the decision. And I think we leave the decision to the Gambian people.
Finally, the victims of former President Yahya Jammeh are not very happy with your government in terms of, they said you are slow in terms of bringing justice for them. What do you think about this?
We have to exercise patience. What people want, they want us to do the Yahya Jammeh way. We don't want it that way. We contested election based on the principle of democracy, rule of law. We have to follow that process. Everything is a process. And I think we are making a lot of efforts. The Truth and Reconciliation Commission is... we'll start on February.
First Gambian President Adama Barrow in part two of an exclusive interview with reporter Cindy Mariner in Banjo. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, January 30th. Please send your comments and opinions to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time, 16 minutes past the hour. Kenya's main opposition coalition, the National Super Alliance, known as NASA, says it will proceed with plans to officially install former Prime Minister Raila Odinga as the country's president in the capital, Nairobi, today, Tuesday. The party has called on its supporters and the general public to attend the swearing-in ceremony to be held at the Uhuru Park. But the Attorney General has warned that swearing-in Mr. Odinga is treasonous and a violation of the Constitution. The Independent Electoral and Boundaries Commission declared incumbent President Uhuru Kenyatta the winner of the presidential election runoff. The opposition party rejected the outcome of the election, saying it was fraught with irregularities and rigging to favor the ruling party. VOA's Peter Clotty reached Jakayo Midiwo, a prominent member of the Kenya's main opposition party, NASA.
Well, you know how the elections went in Kenya, and I think there is no serious attempt by the people holding power to reconcile the country. You know, just this week, NASA gave out the actual election results, which showed very clearly that Raila won. We are in this position now, as it were, where only some form of dialogue could have saved our country. I see that Uhuru Kenyatta is not taking NASA seriously. I also seem to think that NASA has no option but to keep on doing what they're doing because there is nobody extending an olive branch to calm down the situation. So as it were, NASA supporters will be in Nairobi and the swearing in will go on.
The Uhuru Stadium, where NASA plans to inaugurate former Prime Minister Raila Odinga as the president, is closed, and the police are going to be in numbers. Aren't you concerned the leadership and some of your supporters could possibly be arrested before the ceremony even takes place?
I think it would be foolish on the side of the government to try to intimidate the public. From where I stand, what I see is some kind of resolve from NASA and the public, which are really tired of bad governance. And I don't think you can force people using the power of the gun to rule them by force. I don't think it will work ultimately. It just shows, really, just lack of proper leadership in this country.
What do you think will happen if the government using the state security to clamp on an activity the administration has deemed illegal and an affront to the Constitution that contravenes the Constitution that could create chaos and plunge the country into instability?
I don't think they would go that far. And I really hope they don't try to go that direction. I think there is no law broken, and the right of association is enshrined in our constitution. We can't stop that. That would be counterproductive. But I can tell you, at the end of the day, it will be Uhuru and his people crying, not the NASA people crying. The blood of the people are already in their hands. They have done it before. But I can also tell you that my observation is that nobody is scared. So I think it is to wait and see, but I really hope and pray that they will not take the law into their own hands.
So what do you expect to happen Tuesday as NASA goes ahead with the plans to inaugurate Raila Odinga as the legitimate president of Kenya, despite warnings by the Attorney General and the spokesperson of the government saying this undermines the Constitution and is treasonous?
But the Chief Justice has said he can't stop it. There is no law broken. I mean, Attorney General and the Chief Justice, who is the greater protector of the law? The Attorney General is an Uhuru man. What do you expect him to say? He is not a neutral abbot. He is not. What is sensible, where Kenya is today, would have been, the honorable thing would have been for Uhuru to pick up his phone and call Raila. But as long as not going to call the winner of elections, I see Kenya becoming two countries, the way I see it. Because more than half the country have decided to say they don't want to be ruled by Uhuru Kenyatta.
Jakayo Midiwo is a prominent member of Kenya's main opposition coalition, known as NASA. He spoke with VOA's Peter Clotty from the capital, Nairobi. Togo's 14-party opposition coalition says it will hold another protest tomorrow, Wednesday, to demand the resignation of President Fouad Nasimbe. The protesters are demanding a return to the country's 1992 constitution, which established a two-term limit for the presidency. President Nasimbe, in power since 2005, is proposing a referendum to change the constitution to a 2-5-year term of office. Bridget Ajamangbo is coordinator of the coalition of 14 political parties that are leading the protest. She says Wednesday's demonstration is intended to put more pressure on President Nasimbe as both sides await the resumption of a dialogue sponsored by the Economic Community of West African States.
That we went to pay a visit to the head of state of Guinea and Ghana because they've called us, and it was to assess the implementation of the measures for APEC. And after this assessment, the head of state of Guinea made the suggestion that the government of Togo should take quickly those measures for appeasement to allow the dialogue to start somewhere between 23rd and 26th of July. But to date, we don't have something new with regard to the measures for appeasement. They have not been taken. And what we can tell you is that we are expecting a delegation sent by the head of state of Ghana. They should come and see us in Togo this week. And we are expecting that with their visit, the government will understand that he has to take those measures.
Bridget, who is supposed to begin the dialogue? The government, the ECOWAS, or the opposition?
It's the mediators that started to help us to have this dialogue. And precisely, it's the head of state of Ghana who should call for this dialogue. And for us, we think that this government still needs to feel that Togolese people won't change. That's why we'll be on the street this week again. We'll start from Wednesday to Saturday.
The last time there was a demonstration, there was violence. Is the government allowing you now to have peaceful demonstrations and in all cities of Togo?
What we always do is that we respect the legal framework. And for this time, we'll give them a notice informing them that we have to demonstrate. And we hope that there will not be violence.
Do you, as the opposition, have any precondition for the dialogue, or you are open to dialogue now?
We are open to dialogue, but what we are saying is that the government should show its goodwill to discuss and to find solutions for this conflict. If the government is not able to take those kind of measures to correct and to redress the human rights violation that they committed by arresting some demonstrators, what do you expect to receive, to gain from this dialogue? It means that if we go to this dialogue, we'll not gain anything. So that's why they should show their political will to find a solution to the conflict. And this will encourage everybody. This will show our people that now political leaders are all willing to find a solution to the conflict.
Bridget, thank you very much. It's so nice to talk with you.
Thank you very much.
Bridget Ajamagbo is coordinator of a coalition of 14 political parties that are leading the protest in Togo. She was speaking with me from the capital, Lomé. Although abortion is legal in Burkina Faso for certain cases, many women still search out clandestine procedures. As of 2014, 23% of abortions were self-induced. Jean Benjamin Bado is a law student and supervisor at the New Initiative for Development and Health Organization in Burkina Faso. He spoke to Ricky Stryak about the challenges women face in accessing legal and safe abortions in Burkina Faso.
To abortion in Burkina Faso, we must say that abortion is a phenomenon that is not recognized by the law of our country. For the time being, abortion is not authorized, but there are four domains in which it is authorized. This is in case of rape, in case of incest, abortion is authorized in Burkina Faso. There are also the case where the health of the mother is in peril, and there is a case where the health of the child is in peril. So, but we must also add that there are some conditions that we have to respect.
I know in some of these countries, in some cases, that even though the law says a woman can have an abortion if she has been raped, the hurdles to her actually accessing a legal abortion are difficult, even if she has been raped or her health is in jeopardy. Is that the case in Burkina Faso?
Yes, it is the case in Burkina Faso, because as the law don't authorize the abortion, women tend to practice, but they don't make it in the legal way, in the medical way, because it is not authorized. And they tend to go and see the others who will give them some method that is not good.
What does your group think needs to change?
To resolve this problem, we are speaking about the legal cadre of abortion, because four cases where abortion is authorized. And maybe in these four cases, there are some conditions, and these conditions are not respected in Burkina Faso, because these conditions even are. When we say that if a woman who are pregnant in case of rape can practice the abortion, you have to reduce the state, because we notice that in many cases the woman, she cannot practice the abortion because these conditions are too hard for her. So our fighting is to reduce these conditions and permit to the women to be able to practice abortion in the case. For the time being, it is abortion in the legal cadre.
Jean Benjamin Bado is a law student and supervisor at the New Initiatives for Development and Health Organization in Burkina Faso. He was speaking to Ricky Stryer from Ouagadougou. And that's it for this Tuesday, January 30th edition of Daybreak Africa. Join us again tomorrow for more African news and features right here on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post editor Samson O'Malley, along with all of our engineers, I'm James Butte, wishing you a lovely day.
The State of the Union Address is an important annual message delivered by the President of the United States to a joint session of the United States Congress. VOA will provide complete coverage of President Donald Trump's first State of the Union speech, along with a Democratic response, beginning Wednesday, January 31st at 1:45 UTC.
Hello, Africa. This is Peter Clotty, host of VOA's Africa Weekend show, Nightline Africa. Tune in. You will be glad you did.
Nightline Africa is a fast-paced, tightly edited news show designed to keep our listeners engaged from beginning to end. Nightline comes to you live from the Voice of America on the following shortwave frequencies: 6080 kilohertz, 49.3 meter band, and 15580 kilohertz, 19.2 meter band.